Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Conservative Party Radio. My name is Tracy Coyle.
And I'm Bill Hinman.
We're going to be your host tonight for this edition of American Conservative Party Radio. Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Tracy. How was your day today?
Today was an odd day. Victoria had an eye surgery called a vitrectomy.
Oh, my goodness. That doesn't sound pleasant.
Well, they go in, they take all the fluid out of the eye, and replace it with saline.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
well, I hope that cleared up whatever the problem was.
Well, it actually now allows them to be able to see what's actually going on in the eye, because it had so much stuff going on in there. So, I spent most of the afternoon in a waiting room with Victoria's best friend from high school, who is an unabashed socialist.
Oh my gosh.
By her own admission. But she calls herself a personal conservative and a political socialist.
Really?
And I asked, now, we've known each other for about 14 years. We see each other all the time. We have general conversations. There are certain areas where we simply don't have lots of discussions because we so dramatically diverge from how we think about things.
Sure.
And she's a rabid Obama fan.
Doesn't surprise me.
A rabid Green. And so, you know, our points of view are very divergent. So we've always tended to stay away from those things, mainly because, you know, I appreciate the fact that her and Victoria have been friends for a very, very long time. However, today we spent almost the entire 3 hours that we were together speaking about politics and doing so in a very excellent way.
Wow.
And it was the first time I'd ever heard her say that she was a personal conservative but a political socialist. I wanted to find out how she could reconcile those two extremely divergent points of view.
Really?
In such a way as to make sense. And her first comment to me was, she said, well, I think there's things that government should be doing. I said, conservatives think like that too. There are certain tasks, certain things that government does and government's supposed to do. And generally speaking, when it behaves and does those things, it does it fairly well.
Yes.
We agreed on many things, but she added two things, one of which I could have a certain amount of tolerance for. The other I had none. And the first one was, she said, education. She thought government had a responsibility for education.
Now, and by government, she meant federal government.
Government as a general rule.
We weren't
speaking too much of federal versus state. However, primarily we were speaking of federal.
Okay.
And, of course, health care.
Aha.
Now, I said, can you agree that with very, very few exceptions, anything that government touches, government screws up? She goes, oh, I can agree with that. I said, can you agree that when government, sorry, that's going to be a problem tonight.
Yeah, well, for all of us, I think.
When government is involved, manipulation is possible.
Yes. Probable even.
She goes, I can agree with that. And I said, okay, so if when government gets involved, they screw it up. And when government gets involved, there can be manipulation. Why would you want to give health care and education to government? And she said, well, they're the only ones that can do it efficiently. And I said, are you suggesting to me that you think government is efficient? She goes, well, more efficient than any other way. I said, okay, that's certainly a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And in if we
don't agree with it, but it's a point of view, yes.
Well, you know, and focusing in, you know, I wanted to have a conversation with her about a lot of different things, and we eventually had some interesting conversations.
Mm-hmm.
She's absolutely a big fan of the idea of personal liberty and thinks that it's primarily more important than anything else, which I found to be rather interesting.
Really?
But she also, and this is the place where most liberals, I believe, run into problem with the idea of personal liberty. She believed that there were too many choices available.
Oh, my goodness.
You've heard that, haven't you?
I have heard that ascribed to people. I have never actually heard somebody personally say that.
Too many choices. And, I say there's no such thing as too many choices, just too many lazy people willing to do the work necessary to make their own choice.
Mm-hmm.
Or too many people unwilling to accept the idea that other people are making choices different from them.
Right.
In any case, it was a very good conversation spent waiting while the little board that they had in the waiting room flashed Victoria's patient number in OR, in OR, in OR, in OR for an hour and a half. And then they didn't want to let Victoria leave because her blood oxygen level was too low.
Uh-huh.
And they said, the doctor that was supervising her recovery said, I think I'm going to recommend that you go to the hospital for observation. And, of course, that's like, you know, telling a dog, stop wagging your tail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you tell Victoria and I that she's going to go to the hospital, and that's pretty much guaranteed that no matter, she could be arm hanging by a thread, and that's pretty much guaranteed that we're not going to the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to happen. So we both looked at each other and looked at her and went, no, not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we did get her home around 7-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ran out and voted in today's very minor elections here. Only two items were on the ballot, a city board position,
mm-hmm,
and an open judge slot. Now,
uh-huh,
it's kind of interesting because the judge, one of the candidates for judge, is someone that I know very well,
mm-hmm,
and whom I helped build a website for his candidacy.
Excellent.
And who I've been supporting personally in his candidacy. To give you an idea, there are three candidates. A woman that has been an attorney for about 25 years,
mm-hmm,
who has clerked for the Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice.
Uh-huh.
Who has worked in one of the big-name law firms in town for many, many years,
mm-hmm,
who's been an active fundraiser for political candidates, and who has been in a courtroom exactly 28 times.
25-year career, and she's been in a courtroom 28 times. Okay.
And she's considered the best qualified of the three candidates.
By whom?
Oh, by everybody. Russ Feingold endorsed her.
Hmm.
The most qualified candidate for this judge position.
Hmm.
The second candidate is a former ADA.
Mm-hmm.
Been an attorney for about 20 years. Has spent most of the last of the last 10 years, most of it being an ADA or working in a large firm here in town that's pretty well politically connected.
Mm-hmm.
Not counting his ADA appearances, of which he has about 1,000 courtroom appearances as an ADA,
mm-hmm.
he has about 300 court appearances in the last 20 years.
Okay.
My friend, who has been an attorney for more the better part of 35 years, who's also a CPA, who had 15 years worth of corporate law and has spent the last 20 years in private practice, has over 4,000 case appearances in virtually every category of law that appears in court.
Okay.
The attorney with 28 cases
mm-hmm.
never appeared in court for a family law matter or a criminal matter or
oh,
a probate matter or a guardianship matter or adoption or a traffic misdemeanor or felony.
Wow.
Her entire 28 cases was civil litigation.
Hmm.
These were the three candidates we had for this judgeship.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that my friend, the easily most experienced, broadest experienced attorney who has seen more inside of the courtroom than the other two attorneys combined
mm-hmm.
will be lucky to get 1,000 votes today.
Really? Wow.
Lucky to get 1,000 votes. So, I'd like to be thought that it would be odd that he isn't. All the local newspapers noted the experience discrepancy as a side note. So, I'm pretty disappointed by what that future will be. We'll see in the morning.
Yeah,
I
sure
expect
will.
Of the 167 people that voted in my precinct today,
mm-hmm.
he will get exactly one vote.
Really?
Pretty certain.
That's terrible.
So, my day's actually been relatively okay. How about yours?
Well, actually, mine has been kind of a, oh my God, kind of a day. I was on a chat site, and a person that I was chatting with there threw a couple of names at me that I hadn't heard before, and I said, really? Well, so tell me who these people are and all that kind of stuff. So he provided a link to me that I went and visited. And I will throw out two general questions, and then we'll proceed to give some answers.
Okay. Fire away. Who are these two people?
Well, first of all, I'm going to ask, when is a conspiracy not a conspiracy?
When is...
A conspiracy not a conspiracy. And then
when
the second...
one person?
Well, no. Actually, this particular case, there's at least the two principals involved, and we'll go on from there. Now, you would not be able to answer that question unless the names Cloward and Piven rang a bell with you.
Nope, can't say they do.
Okay. Well, Cloward and Piven were professors. And like a lot of professors, they're pretty liberal and socialistic and et cetera, et cetera. But in the mid-1960s, they had published in The Nation magazine, and incidentally, these were Columbia University professors. They were Richard Andrew Cloward and Francis Fox Piven. And what they published was a strategy of forcing political change through orchestrated crisis. And the Cloward-Piven strategy seeks to hasten the fall of capitalism by overloading the government bureaucracy with a flood of impossible demands, thus pushing society into crisis and economic collapse. Now, that's pretty interesting, given the times that we're living in today. But one of the things that kind of jumped out at me in this article, and incidentally, this article is from the American Thinker and was on February 17th of 2009, is that these two professors were very much influenced by a guy by the name of Saul Alinsky. Now, that name might ring a bell with you. Because Saul Alinsky...
Somebody that Barack Obama really likes?
Well, he really, not only really likes him, but he got trained in Saul Alinsky's method. And incidentally, that is, the Alinsky method is a searchable phrase. And in 1989, he wrote a book called Rules for Radicals. And basically, he gave the bare bones outline of exactly what Cloward and Piven then used as a strategy. Now, I think that that is significant because, as the article says, there was a period of time of about almost 50 years when the Democrats were in total control of Congress. And during that period of time, they passed a whole lot of laws that established a welfare system and made it an entitlement. And the thing about the Cloward-Piven strategy is you make that government enforce to the letter the laws that were written. Now, I don't know that you can have a conspiracy without secrecy. But when you have a strategy that is published in a national publication, you have press that covers hearings in Congress, and you have a Congress that knowingly or unknowingly passes legislation that gives that kind of opening, I think you can have a conspiracy without having a conspiracy because it is absolutely out in the open, there for everyone to see if they would only pay attention.
So a conspiracy.
So I thought that was pretty interesting.
A conspiracy is not a conspiracy when it's a plan.
Exactly. And when it is published.
Here's my opinion.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Okay.
So I kind of digested that and said, isn't that really interesting? And then ran on to the next thing that I got. I am a member of the NRA. And as a member, oh yeah, I know that radical organization that wants to go around killing everybody. But nevertheless, I'm a member. And as a member of the NRA, I get a almost daily NRA digest kind of a thing, and they send out via email various stories. And one of the stories caught my attention. And the title of the story is House Shoots Down Federal Gun Controls. Now, before anybody gets excited, this is not the United States Congressional Representation House, okay? Nobody panic here. But the House in Montana passed legislation under their House Bill, Montana House Bill number 246, that firearms made in Montana and used in Montana would be exempt from federal regulation. The same would be true for firearm accessories and ammunition made and sold in the state. Now, that caught my attention, and it caught my attention because there are 20 states that are considering sovereignty legislation, and that is designed to enforce the Ninth and Tenth Amendments to the Constitution, which basically say, folks, if we didn't explicitly say in the Constitution that the federal government had a role in this, then those rights are reserved to the states and the people.
You know how I feel about the Ninth Amendment, Bill.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's okay, though.
It's one of my ultimate favorite amendments.
So I read that article and I said, okay, they've got something going there. And at the very least, if their Senate also passes that, they'll set up a showdown with the federal government, and we can see where things go from there. But the interesting thing was in the comments of that article. There were a number of people from a number of different states, a lot of them from Texas, that said, man, I need to send this to my legislators in Texas, or whatever state they were from. I know that California in 1994 passed a sovereignty resolution, agreed to by both the House and the Senate in California. So California is already in record. There are 20 states that are considering that. So, and there are 4 states that have already enacted it. So if the 20 states are different, we've already got 25 states. You only need 12 more for a three-quarter majority to enforce that.
Just about anything ratified.
Exactly. So, I thought that was a really interesting development, considering how the current occupant of the White House has said, oh yeah, he believes that the Second Amendment confers an individual right. However, he does not think that right is unfettered and that it's certainly okay to legislate common sense regulation. He has an attorney general that has been confirmed, Eric Holder, that has been an active opponent of an individual right. And he certainly has members in his cabinet that have been hostile to the Second Amendment. So it will be interesting to see what kind of a reaction, assuming that the Senate in Montana agrees, they will elicit from the federal government under the current administration.
Well, you know, I did read about the Montana motion, and I thought it was a really good idea. I also figured out where the federal government and Montana were going to butt heads, and that is the federal government actually has a fair amount of land in Montana that is contiguous with Montana state land in a way that people hunt in Montana and cross back and forth across boundaries all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, the federal government could say, that's fine, but you can't have your hunters on my land. Now, there's a certain amount of you being in California, you're aware of this. Having lived in California, I'm aware of this. People here in the Midwest and in the East don't necessarily know this, but very large chunks of the West is controlled by the federal government, BLM.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My county is about 80% owned by the federal government.
But at the same token, states have always said, you know, you can control, you can say you own it, but in the end, we're going to control what happens here because, you know, it's within our state border.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been a whole lot of cross back and forth about it because most of the land is scrub oak and desert and, you know, backwood mountain areas, not what you would consider prime developmental land, but good grazing land, good hunting land.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that the federal government is going to go to California and say, you know, 80% of your state lands are no longer accessible to your citizens as long as you have this federal this rule.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I could see a huge big fight going on about that.
Oh, yeah.
That would be rather interesting.
It would. If you will remember back in the 1980s, I think it was, maybe mid to late 80s, there was that whole sagebrush rebellion kind of a thing that was happening, which was basically the western states that was telling the federal government, wait a second, you guys are way overreaching and overstepping your bounds.
Now, I've had some personal experience with state sovereignty with one of our clients where the state asserted its sovereign immunity in a
mm-hmm.
federal court case, and we were not happy with it. It was upheld, and the state
mm-hmm.
basically told the federal court, you know, screw you,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
the federal court judge said, yeah, they can say that, and they can get away with it.
Whoa!
They
well,
did, and they got away with it, and our clients lost their house because of it.
Well, I'm hard cases make bad law sometimes.
So, there are certain, I don't, and frankly, I'm a big fan of state sovereignty, so, you know,
yep.
being a federalist, you know, in mindset, I'm appreciative of that situation.
Yeah.
Rick, you've been out there in the ether holding very patiently. I'm going to bring you on. Good evening, Rick.
Good evening.
Rick, good to hear from you.
Always a pleasure.
Did you have something specific? Because I know Bill had one more point that he wanted to make.
Well, Bill stole my thunder tonight, so.
Uh-oh.
I was going to talk a little bit about state sovereignty, so.
Well, you know, I think it's a, I think it's one of those situations where if the federal government gets it in its, a bug up its butt, then it's going to start, you know, making society into the society that it wants. I think a certain number of states, and, you know, the reality is it is, you know, 40 states in this union will quickly tell the federal government to go stick it up their ear.
Yes.
Now, the other 10 states might have enough population to override those 40, but you know what? 40 states can make things pretty miserable for the federal government no matter what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true.
And I'm all for making Barack Obama's life as miserable as possible.
I will second that motion.
So, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Please excuse my little bit of making noise here. I am sucking on a cough drop to try and keep from coughing.
And if I had one, I would also.
CJ had the flu last week. I got it. Had a nasty cough for over the weekend. I'm still suffering from the after effects of that. However, here I am. Ha, ha, ha. Alive and well. I want to bring up something, and Rick, I'm going to see if I can get you involved in this separate subject, now that your thunder has been struck.
Sorry about that, Rick.
Yeah, that's quite all right.
The Charlie Domino on our website, AmericanConservativeParty.org, made a very poignant observation the other day, something I had paid no attention to until he brought it to my attention, to our attention, our reader's attention. And then I went, hey, yeah. And he pointed out that while all the self-congratulating pats on the backs were going on among Republicans for having stood firm against the stimulus package, that stimulus package was a grand total of $87 billion more than the $700 billion TARP package most of them voted for just 5 months ago. And I went, yeah, what's the big difference between $700 billion going down some rat hole in September and $787 billion going through a whole lot of other rat holes here that we should be saying congratulations to anybody? I thought that was rather interesting.
That is interesting. Rick, you have some thoughts on that?
Well, I've been thinking this before I read Charlie's post, actually this afternoon, that one of, around here, Lindsey Graham has been one of the most vocal senators against this stimulus package, and he voted for the last one.
Yeah, I'm having a problem with it.
Well, no. You know, I think that there are some fundamental differences between them, though, you see. And here are the differences that I think I see. One, the TARP bailout was a total of, $700 billion, something like that, something close to that.
Right.
$750. And according to all of the reports coming out of Congress, what they were told was that we have to have this because if we don't have this, what we risk is a total systemic catastrophic failure of the financial system in the United States that will cascade into other nations. And yes, we've seen that happen. So we have to have this money so that we can forestall or prevent that systemic collapse. The stimulus package is simply a 20-year, 30-year, 40-year pent-up wish list of social programs that the Democrats have been stumping for the last 20, 30, 40 years. And in my mind, that's a pretty profound difference.
Okay. My question would be, does government have any business in either one?
And my short answer to that is, they have no business in either one.
Okay, then, as far as I'm concerned, and you know I said this at the time, I said, let it fail.
Absolutely.
Now, of course, a lot of people, including some members of our party,
mm-hmm.
said that was irresponsible.
Well,
that we could not risk that type of failure in the economy because of all the collateral damage that it would cause. And, of course, my opinion is that that damage is already there.
Yes, it is.
And exposing it is half of the problem of fixing it.
Yes.
And as long as we continue to cover it over, we're not working at fixing it.
I agree. Absolutely. Totally true. Let it fail. And let me make a point about that, Tracy.
Okay.
Because apparently in Congress, even as we speak, even though they are now in recess, there is talk of a TARP 2 and talk of stimulus 2. So far, we've got 1.7 trillion dollars committed funds, and we're talking about TARP 2 and stimulus 2. And we still aren't solving the problem.
Yeah, and if you add in what the Fed has already dumped into the system, we're probably up and approaching the $3 trillion mark. And we're still a long way away.
Oh, absolutely.
I am of the mindset that I fully expected that when the idea that this stimulus package was going to pass, you know, I went to the idea was, okay, what's going to happen next? And it's one of the things that I've posted about. I think I've talked about it a little bit on the radio at some point, where I said, okay, let's assume for a second Barack Obama gets his stimulus package. Today he has it.
Mm-hmm.
How long is it going to be? How many days is he going to stand in front of a press corps that's going, unemployment hit 7.8, unemployment hit 8.2, unemployment hit 8.8. When is the stimulus package going to start kicking in? How long will Barack Obama be able to stand in front of those media people and say, give it time, give
mm-hmm.
it time?
Mm-hmm.
And my answer is, he has all the patience of a two-year-old. It's going to happen about twice. And when he answers it the second time, he's going to go stomping back into the West Wing and start going, we need something right now to start working right now, because I'm not going to answer that question anymore.
Right. Exactly.
And the question I had was, how long is that going to take? And apparently, it might take only until, like, Monday or Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I know.
In which case, we might get something closer to something that might actually work, but my guess is not. So, we've done the doom and gloom. I already know where my prediction is. We're in a world of hurt that's going to get a whole lot worse, and this stimulus plan ain't going to do squat diddly for it. So
that's exactly right.
You know, Obama owns it at this particular point in time. I have sent emails to my two senators, Feingold and Cole, and my congresswoman, Tammy Baldwin, and I said, you own this economy. Barack Obama said calamity would occur unless he got this stimulus bill. Well, he's got it. Calamity follows. He owns it. This economy is his as of today. He can
yes.
tell me about what he inherited. He can tell me about what Bush gave him. But he said what he needed to fix it was this stimulus. He's got it. He owns it. And I am going to hold them and him to that going
yes.
forward.
Yes.
So I'm content with the fact that despite the GOP's... And where was I reading this? The GOP's, you know, self-congratulation, patting themselves on the back for standing firm. And somebody said, here's a president, 21 days into his presidency, and he's passed the largest spending bill in the history of the planet, and got it confirmed without, for the most part, the benefit of one of two major political parties.
Yep.
What are you actually being happy about? He's done something momentous. Wonderful. What do you think is so great?
Exactly.
All right.
And one more point about that, too. You will recall that, we have to pass this now. And there is no time to even read this legislation. We have to pass it now.
I know where you're going.
And so they passed it. And what does our current resident of the White House do? Why,
he got to use Air Force One again.
Yes. And he doesn't sign that bill. No. He goes on a 3-day vacation. Oh, well. I guess it
was Valentine's Day. He's got to take Connie out to dinner.
Yeah, I know. I just saw that as being pretty humorous.
Yeah. All right. For those of you in the know and are listening carefully and been paying attention and watching the website, you may know that the Executive Committee of the American Conservative Party is about to be replaced. The incoming executive committee will take its place soon. Sooner than they think, I think.
I think so.
If I have anything to say with it, and unfortunately for most people, I do. I think that we're going to get an opportunity to see some new ideas, some new ways of doing things. I think it's going to be cool.
Yep.
I'm going to be sitting here in, you know, what shall I call this? You know, Rush has his EIB microphone, his
right.
Attila the Hun chair. Can I call mine Attila the Hunny Bear's chair?
Sure.
No. And, you know, we'll get a chance to see how some fresh blood, you know, brings into things. I'm kind of looking forward to the idea of not having to worry about things every single day.
You still will.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
And
incidentally, for those folks who don't know, Rick is going to be one of the new executive committee people.
Okay. Just a suggestion. All right. So we have about 18 minutes.
All right.
Rick, was there something else you wanted to bring up? Because I want to spend a little time with Bill, reflecting upon this past year.
You go right ahead.
Well, that's fine for you. Bill, you got involved with this party pretty early on, yes?
Pretty early on. Wasn't absolute first, but pretty early on, yes. And that
five.
Was some really exciting times.
I was number five. Member
How
number
cool.
five.
Cool.
So I've been around pretty much from day one, pretty much from minute one. And, it has been an amazing year in my mind. Many things that I would have expected to have occurred over the last year didn't. Many things that I expected that would occur over the year have. I did predict last February that Barack Obama would be president right now. And I pretty much am, I'm not going to say comfortable with the idea, but I'm not surprised at this particular point with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I did not expect the financial meltdown the way it happened, although the financial meltdown was perfectly understandable and expected by anybody that was paying attention to things a year ago.
Yes.
The only question was when, not if.
Mm-hmm.
The only question was where, not how.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things that, of everything that has gone on in the last year, I think I have one regret.
Really?
I don't think, and this is going to sound really strange coming from me, I don't think we have defined conservative very well.
I think that's true.
And I think it's probably the one thing that I regret most not having helped to define better. Because I think there, and you know what, I fault myself on that because at one point I made a conscious effort to include people that I think are not conservative, but who call themselves conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than to say, no, you're not. And this is why you're not. And I think that's the one thing that has caused me the most angst over the last 60 days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In thinking about, switching over to a new EC. I am very happy with the work that has been done. I'm extremely happy with our principles in this party. extremely convinced that it will serve this party as a foundation far into the future.
Yes.
And it will serve this country well that we remember them. So I'm pretty happy about those things.
Good. And incidentally, Tracy, I don't know that we ought to beat ourselves up so terribly hard about not being able to define conservatives. I can tell you that in all of the blogs that I read on the right, and I go through probably about 12 or so of them every day, and there is this ongoing discussion of what does it mean to be a conservative. And probably the most pessimistic of those is a guy that runs Right Wing Nut House. And I'm not exactly sure where he's coming from. I frankly haven't really figured him out. Have had a little bit of a conversation with him via comments on his blog about, well, tell me what you really believe. And the way that he states his beliefs is pretty compatible with conservatism. But he is up in the air about conservatives don't recognize that we're in the 21st century, and he equates that with conservatives want smaller government. Well, and I, at least from his penned words, he doesn't believe that that's possible, that we need a bigger government. After all, we're 300 plus million people, and it takes a big government to run that. Seems to give pretty short shrift to states' rights and states running things within their states. So I'm not real sure where he's coming from. But I see that conversation all over the right of center blogs. You know, what does it mean to be a conservative? So I don't think we ought to beat ourselves up too hard here, because everybody seems to be wrestling with that question.
Well, I listened to somebody quoted John Adams today.
Ah.
And, you know, frankly, I said this before, and it's something that I've been trying pretty hard to keep doing. I want to spend some more time reading about that gentleman, because he seems to have said an awful lot of nice things that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to spend some more time listening to some of the things that he said.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
One of the things that he said, and you've heard this, and I don't disagree with it, is that our Constitution is written for, I don't agree with it 100%, our Constitution is written for a religious and moral people.
Yes.
Because without a religious and moral people, our Constitution can't work.
Yes, he said that. Yes, he did.
And now, I understand both points of view, and I don't disagree with those two points. Because the Constitution is not designed to create religion or morality.
That's true.
And I think there's a segment of people that agree with that 100%, except for the morality part.
I think that you're right on that, but it escapes me as to why they would believe that.
Because we have too many choices in this world.
Ah, there we go again.
The problem is, I want you to have the complete freedom to choose to do whatever you think you believe is important to you.
Okay.
Unless you make a choice that I think is really wrong. At which
mm-hmm.
point, I can either say you're wrong, or you shouldn't be allowed to make that choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have individual liberty, and I support the idea you have individual liberty, I can't tell you that you have made a wrong choice. you have made a choice based upon your own choices.
Well, but we do that all the time.
Not using the government to back it up.
Oh, well, of course we do.
Yeah, stop it.
Well, I mean, we say that theft is wrong, and we have criminal statutes that say that, and we use the state
to
back
that
up.
I don't have to do anything else other than the fact of you've just infringed upon somebody else's liberty. You're free to make any choice you want as long as it doesn't infringe upon me. Stealing
okay.
from me is infringing upon me, so that's not a viable choice. I'm talking about a perfectly reasonable choice that has nothing to do with me or anybody else's infringement. I just don't like the choice you made. Okay? Bill,
okay.
You have a nice house. I've seen pictures of it.
Yep.
Well, from...
Yeah, I know.
Miles.
Yeah.
Okay?
Google Earth is a great program.
Google Earth is a great program. Did I tell you that if you do the street view of my house, I'm in it?
You did tell me that. But my screen won't resolve enough for me to see that, so I'm...
You can't... They've made it so that you can't see... But you can see that I'm standing there and I got my dogs on the leash.
All right.
Isn't that kind of... In any case, it's not going to help you. You won't be able to tell who it is.
Yeah, okay.
It's me, there's no doubt about that. In any
okay.
case, Bill, if you want to paint that house bright orange, I think you should be allowed to. But let me tell you, you probably got a neighbor that'd be really pissed about it.
Oh, probably,
now,
yeah.
Now, you should be able to do that. But for your neighbor to say, you can't have that choice. See, I have a problem with that. He thinks you have too many choices. So he's going to limit your choices to beige or light beige or
mm-hmm.
eggshell.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let me tell you where that argument goes astray, and why that pesky doggone phrase in the Constitution, the general welfare, comes back to bite us. Because my neighbor can probably make a fairly good case that if I paint my house bright orange, that's going to lower his property value. And I have therefore harmed him.
Well, here's my problem.
Okay.
Do I care about your neighbor's property value?
But remember we said, as long as my choice doesn't affect somebody else, then I ought to be free to do it. But as soon as my choice affects somebody else, then we got a problem.
So at what level do those choices get to be infringed upon?
Exactly. And that is where I think Adams had it right.
And this is where the root of my question is.
And our Constitution is designed for a religious and moral people.
Okay. That's the problem with morality.
Yep.
Is that you and your neighbor can have that argument. But I shouldn't be part of it. Not my choice. The general welfare doesn't extend all the way out to me.
And you see, and yes, you and I agree with that. Because you see, in my view, what that says is, okay, there obviously needs to be some kind of a resolution there, or either that or my neighbor and I are going to come to blows or whatever. So, if you keep it at the most local level, which in our case would be the county because we are not an incorporated city, we would have some kind of zoning law that would be voted on by our elected representatives. The state would not have a say in it. The federal government would not have a say in it. Would not affect any cities. There aren't any in my county, but if there were cities in my county, it would not affect them. That might not even affect, if you drew the thing right, anything more than the community that we lived in. And that is effective in terms of our concept of personal liberty, subject to that vast experiment that we conduct of people living together as harmoniously as people can live together.
I'm of the mind that what we need to somehow focus on, and this is what I'm trying to work on myself, is to focus in on what is that core that makes conservative conservative. And I keep coming back to the general idea that has completely left my brain.
Yeah, I do that more and more often. The older I get.
The general idea that if I say it long enough, you know, and get it going, it might actually just come out naturally. I don't have to think about
mm-hmm.
it. The general idea that individual liberty. Nope, it's just not going to come there.
Okay.
3 minutes left. Can I make it? Can I make it in 3 minutes? If I have to think about it. Rick, I'm going to let you say something for a minute, and I'm going to see if I can let it come back perfectly.
Well, what would you like me to say?
Well, talk about, from your perspective, and we may have different perspectives. I mean, I'm over here on the West Coast, and you're over there on the eastern part of the U.S. Do you all wrestle with those same kinds of problems there?
Oh, absolutely.
How do you solve them there?
Unfortunately, in my part of the world, we don't.
Hmm.
It seems to me. Because you can drive, you know, the problem we have here is not more house color, per se. It's,
mm-hmm.
you know, you've got a nice residential area. You know, three-bedroom brick ranchers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one blank lot.
Mm.
And the blank lot gets sold, and somebody pops in a trailer.
Ah.
I'm not talking like a double wide or a fabricated house. I'm talking about on the wheels trailer.
Okay.
And proceeds to stick a car on cinder blocks in the front, run clotheslines all through the front yard, put old living room furniture on their front porch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody does anything about that. But it's their choice to do so. And I've had this discussion with my oldest daughter several times. She says, isn't that tacky? Why do they do that? And I told her several times, you have the choice not to look in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it.
Okay, we stretched long enough for Tracy to get it. All righty.
We have 1 minute and 15 seconds left, and I have got it.
All right, let us have it.
The fundamental truth of conservatives in this country today is that the United States Constitution limits government action. It does not grant rights. It does not protect the people. It limits government.
Yes.
That, I believe, is the thing that we need to focus in on going forward as far as conservatism is concerned. 30 seconds. Bill, thanks for joining.
Thank
you,
Tracy.
I'll see you next week.
You betcha.
Rick,
we'll be here.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank
we'll
you.
We'll see what happens to you next week.
Incidentally, I already voted.
Yeah, I saw that. You're the only one who has.
Gentlemen, have have a good evening. We'll
Tracy,
talk to
you also.
You too, Tracy.
Next week. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Bye.
We off?
Yes.
All right. Cool.
That was weird.
Yeah.
The clock on the switchboard.
Mm-hmm.
It's going 23, 48, 19, 37, 47,
oh.
18.
Hmm.
It was very weird.
We are
in fact
in the
off.
Board.
Thank you, guys.
All righty. Thank you, Tracy.
All righty.
Talk
to you later.
Later.
All right. Bye-bye.